The first question is, what is a career achievement of which you're most proud of? Then how has it contributed to your field of coastal sciences?
Well, there's my career, as I think many scientific careers are built of small incremental steps. So I didn't have this one breakthrough moment or anything, but one particular thing that I'm particularly proud of, because it sort of marked a step change in my career, was when I established my first working group, and that was based on third-party funding that I was able to apply for, and I was successful in that application. And it brought together researchers, PhD students, other students from different disciplines. So it was an interdisciplinary working group. That is something that I am proud of, and I think is increasingly important in not only coastal science, but particularly in coastal science, because it's an area where so many different things converge. Yeah, coasts are zones of conversion between land and sea, but also between humans and nature. And so to look at issues at the coast interdisciplinarily or even transdisciplinarily across different fields. And so that's what we were able to do in this working group that I established at my institute. And it was the first real interdisciplinary working group where within one group, we had PhD students that were affiliated with different faculty, social science, natural science, and so that was new. Has it contributed to my field of coastal science in the bigger picture? Like I don't think it made a big dent in the global picture of things, but I think with regards to how science is done and also in the way that science is organized at my particular institute, this was a step forward, and I think it did make an influence on the careers of the people that were involved in this group.
Well, that's great. I think it's not only actually from individual contribution to transform into like a group contribution, but also it's like from a curiosity-based science to really solution and application-based science. So second question is, what do you enjoy most about being a scientist? And what really motivates you to continue your work?
So my particular expertise is on tropical coastlines. I work on coral reef systems, and I say systems because I don't just look at the ecological component, but I also look at the social or the human components of the system. So an integrated social ecological system. And again, to me, coastal systems, in particular in coral reefs, are a good example of that, are really diverse. They bring together a lot of diversity in the natural system, biodiversity. Coral reefs are one of the most biodiverse systems on the planet, but also a big diversity of human relations, methodologies, and so on, and also a plethora of anthropogenic impacts. And so the challenges, the stakes are really high. And I think that goes for coastal systems in general. They're focal areas for human activity and for environmental change and societal change that's happening. And so that, to me, is really fascinating. They're a microcosm and a prism of issues that we're currently seeing in many different systems around the world. And this is really focused and highlighted on coral reefs. And I particularly enjoy this diversity. Every day or every new scientific question that you come up with is different from the previous one. So it's a very diverse field where you can combine different questions and different methodological approaches. So that's it's always exciting. And I particularly enjoy working with people in the field. So whether that's colleagues in different parts of the world or with local coastal communities that I encounter during my work.
Right. As you mentioned, actually, I have different new questions every day. So what do you think are the most exciting recent scientific advances in the field of, let's say, coral reef research or topics you're interested in?
Yeah, so for coral reefs, because as is probably well known. Coral reefs are sort of at the spearhead of ecosystems that are changing because of anthropogenic climate change. So they're really one of the most vulnerable systems. And actually, it's been estimated that they're the first ecosystem that we may lose on a global scale because of anthropogenic climate change. But what that really implies or means, or what is coming sort of after that, what the future of coral reefs look like for a long, long time sort of lay in the dark. Yeah. So what are these systems transforming into? How are they functioning in the future? How are they going to be composed? And what is the sort of resilience also that these systems have? What's the scope for them to continue functioning in some way to provide similar ecosystem services to humanity in the future? And so for a long time, that was guesswork. And I think, again, there is no one single epiphany or one single advance that I would highlight, but just looking at how my field has developed over the last 5 years or so, there were several exciting studies that started to look at and show in real time how these systems are changing, what the new composition will look like, and also showing some signs of hope that corals actually, and it's fascinating, are actually much more adaptive, some of them at least, than was previously thought. Is that going to be sufficient to ensure a future for coral reefs as we know them? Probably not, but some species are much more adaptive and can evolve due to a combination of factors much more rapidly than we had thought previously. So that's exciting, and it provides insight for systems other than coral reefs as well.
That's great. It really sounds like the development is really at a full pace. So actually, you naturally also replied to the next question, how these advances really contribute to the sustainable and resilient future of coastal areas. So I think we move on to the next one. Based on your experience and observations, what are the key characteristics of a successful scientist in coastal sciences? And how can younger generation of scientists really develop these kind of qualities?
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things that I think are important. And it's maybe not just restricted to coastal sciences, but applies
there, in general.
Applies in general, but something that's also specific about coasts, because they're diverse systems and at the interface of society and science and nature and humans. Thinking, being curious, is to me the most important basic condition. And starting with a basic curiosity and not giving up on that curiosity, but fostering it further and not giving up if there is setbacks in your career, or if you're not able to make that one advance or career step, not giving up and sticking to it, I think is important. But also having this sort of interdisciplinary outlook and even engaging also beyond the science. So what we're increasingly seeing is that science or academia is called upon more so than in the past to contribute to societal solving societal issues and problems. So we're seeing more and more of a call for science to engage better with policy making and with society. And this means that we also need to foster skills like co-design, transdisciplinarity, and interfacing with policy, contributing to policy. And that calls for skills that in the past weren't necessarily part of a classical academic career, and also are not necessarily fostered or weren't fostered so much in academia or taught in university. And so it's an exciting time for young academics, but it's also challenging because you need skill sets that are not necessarily taught in university, but that require networking, cooperation with other like-minded people, and mentorship. So to seek for those sort of networks, such as what Future Earth Coasts can provide, I think is important in being a successful young coastal scientist.
Thanks. So, and also next question is really interesting. If you were not a scientist, then what are the job or profession do you think you would have pursued?
Huh. Well, there are two things. The first one, which brought me to science in the first place, is that I was interested in being a journalist, actually. So a nature journalist or a science journalist. And because of that interest is why I started studying marine sciences to begin with, because some advice that I received early on before starting to study was, don't study journalism if you want to be such a journalist, but study something else, be good in that field, and then you can you have a characteristic that's unique, like a unique selling point. And so that's why I started to study marine sciences. And I almost, after my PhD, then took another turn to actually focus on journalism. And for many reasons, I stuck with being a scientist. I don't really regret it, but I have a lot of respect and interest also in journalists. And I try to work as much with journalists as possible. And the other thing is a diver or dive instructor. So I was also almost there, because I, of course, do a lot of diving, or used to do a lot of diving for my job. But I think, yeah, it's a quite a different profession working with tourists and in the tourism industry. So in the end, I'm quite happy with the choice that I made.
I think it's actually a combination, because in our work currently, like, ocean literacy is also really, really important. When you were talking about this, I was actually checking an email received a few days ago. I'm not sure if you know a magazine called Hakai. It's brilliant. Every month, their news items and their stories. Mm-hmm. It's Hakai magazine. It's about ocean. It's really, really interesting.
Okay. There's a lot of this interface, and I think it's important. Mm-hmm. Also, from what I said before, reaching out to society. Working in new and innovative ways of reaching out to people and fostering ocean literacy is really important. So we have these sort of boundary people that do boundary work at the interface, and some of them are scientists that turn communicators, some of them are really good journalists or communicators that are very close to science. But I think it's really important to have these people.
It's interesting, also interesting jobs, really. Next question is a bit personal. So apart from your work, what do you enjoy doing in your spare time, and how does it help you to maintain a balance between your personal and professional life? So we're talking about work-life balance, basically.
A couple of things that I like to do. So sports, I go running frequently. I try to do that as often as possible, and that just helps me to focus and get energized. So just running in the park here and, you know, enjoying quiet time to myself to think and to focus and to get my mind sort of free is really important. I enjoy cooking a lot. So whenever I have time, because it both, you know, it helps to feed the family, but it also gets my mind off things. And I really enjoy that, also cooking for friends. So that's another thing that I do. And I love spending time with my family. So particularly our kid. So that's really helps me stay focused and stay sane, and find a balance with my professional life, is to really enjoy being with a young kid.
It's brilliant, because I also heard people saying that actually something like meditation, it doesn't really necessarily to be static. You can also do sports and also cooking, especially. It's really a zen thing.
It's my form of meditation.
So next question is about FEC. So as Future Earth Coast faces new challenges and opportunities, I think you're actually at the best position to reply to this question. What do you consider to be the biggest challenges or opportunities for the initiatives today? And how can coastal science community address them effectively?
So this goes a little bit back to the science and society nexus that I mentioned before. I think increasingly society is looking to science to supply answer to this multitude of pressing issues that we're seeing at the moment. It's kind of it's ironic that on the one hand we see increasing skepticism towards science, and that's maybe because there are increasingly hard truths to be faced. It's becoming increasingly difficult to deny the reality of anthropogenic climate change that we're living in. And it's people are increasingly, maybe subconsciously, realizing that they have to change dramatically, and that's scary. And so people tend to turn away. It's a sort of a thing of shooting the messenger, I guess, because it's an uncomfortable truth, and so you rather try pointing the finger and saying that there is a vested interest in scientists than to really face the reality that maybe science isn't so wrong about some of these things and has things to tell to society. So re-establishing this or establishing this compact between science and society, and finding new ways how we do science together with and for society. So engaging societal members in new interest in academia and understanding of that science is complex and it doesn't necessarily provide simple or easy answers, but that things are complex, and that doesn't mean that there can't be a solution, but there are no easy answers. And that's part of the process. And just because there is disagreement in science doesn't mean that the science isn't clear, for example, if we think of climate change. It's not that there isn't a consensus in the scientific community, it's just about nuances, and there is debate, and that's part of how science works. So engaging society better and supporting societal transformation, developing some sort of positive futurism, like what could be desirable futures, how can this be informed by science, and how can society be supported by science to make these sort of transitions, and also how to sort of decolonize the academy, overcome the sort of traditional academic centers that were, in Northern Europe or in Europe and in Northern Americas, but to move away from this sort of global North, global South divide and foster more partnership and more initiatives, South-South partnerships, having a truly global coastal science. And I think for all of these things, a better compact with society, supporting transformation, informing policy, and academic networking, this is where I think Future Earth Coast is very well suited to make a contribution.
I was going to mention, going through in my mind, you ticked off all the boxes of FACT's mission and approaches actually mentioned in this reply. So that's really brilliant.
Well, I've now worked with FACT for a couple of years, but I'm really in a way I'm also a newcomer. I mean, LOIX has been around for quite a long time, and I really only have worked with Future Earth Coast and this amazing community for like the past 5 years or so in more detail, and I think it's contagious to see the energy there and to identify with the goals, because they are relevant and important goals that Future Earth Coast have.
Then what kind of advice would you have for young scientists in the FACT network really to aspire them to pursue a career in coastal sciences? And you just mentioned some qualities, and do you also have some strategies that you would like to recommend them to succeed despite challenges and difficulties?
Yeah, I think it's important to be very clear that an academic career is very challenging. It's a difficult environment that's characterized by a lot of uncertainty and power issues and so on. So it's not the easiest workplace, but at the same time, it's one of the most exciting careers that you could take, because you can really pursue your interests, you can be to a certain extent be independent in what you do, shape your own career. You're essentially your own employer to a certain extent. So you're master of your own destiny for better or worse. And I think it's important to realize what are the benefits of that, but also not to be overly idealistic about the challenges that are involved. It really takes a toll on personal life, for example. To some extent, you're also dependent on decisions that are beyond your immediate control, like where are you going to spend your life, where do you have to move, and so on. So really being realistic about your work-life balance, how far are you willing to go, Don't compromise necessarily. You also don't forget you have a personal private life that's just as important, and particularly to withstand the pressures of academia and not to burn out. I think it's really important to find that sort of safe place for yourself, whatever that is, and to find that balance. And then let curiosity drive you. So I think that's the key thing that we have as scientists, is this sort of curiosity that's driving us forward, and to pursue our sincere interests, and not giving up on that. And there are, of course, a few strategies that one could use to support this, like finding good mentors, really also looking around what is the best opportunity for you? Not only where do you as a scientist, where can you contribute, but also particularly early in your training, like for a PhD position, don't compromise too much, but really see where there's the best opportunities for you, what brings you forward, what offers you the best training. You are also a resource, you have something to offer, and don't forget that. But at the same time, where is a place that you could, as a personal being, with friends and family and whatever bundle you're carrying in a positive way, where does that fit? So to find this balance, but also to think strategically and find allies that accompany you along the way, I think is very important.
It really touched me. This is really helpful and insightful. I really think so, yeah. And the next question. So as a FAC academician, so what kind of support and resources are you willing to offer to help FAC fellows? And how can they access and benefit from your expertise and experience?
Well, I think most scientists that are at a more advanced level, they have to balance two things, right? So on the one hand, of course, you get an increasing demand on your time with chores and duties and so on, that makes it more and more difficult to spare time. But at the same time, you have more experience to share. And I think all of us, or most of us, are really willing and burning to pass on that sort of experience and knowledge and insights and so on. So I think with most senior scientists or academics, reach out to me or to us, see where we can find time or opportunities to work together, and the sort of, you know, mentoring or passing on advice, even, you know, sometimes that doesn't have to be very extensive, but it can already be helpful just, you know, to share a thought or get a reflection on an idea that you have, or a career step that you're considering, or choices that you have to make, what you should go for, or to establish, to develop a research idea further. And all of these things, from very small to something that's more extensive and could be a more formal way of collaborating and working together. Usually academics like myself are very open to that. So just reach out to us, and then we see what's possible and how we can best help. So that's my offer.
Thank you. And I think actually this mentorship is not only really about professional advices, it's beyond that. It's also life advices. And also, like today, what you've been sharing with us, that's really something that could inspire younger generation of coastal scientists to carry on and to choose their career path and to really make a difference, a positive impact. So
I certainly hope so. I mean, sometimes it's difficult not to get jaded, but it's also important, you know, to stay positive and to find sources of strength and to be able to pass that on. And to reassure each other. It's something that's unique about science, I think, is that, you know, the link between private life and professional life is fluid, probably more so than in many other professions. That, you know, it's difficult to divide this. That's why it's important to find your safe space, like what remains private and personal, but also to use the positivity that can come from, you know, doing something that you personally and privately also enjoy doing, and that you burn for, and bring that positive energy into your job. And I think that's important to make the best of this merger, but also to be mindful that your professional life doesn't overwhelm you as a private person. I think that's important to find this balance.
It's a good piece of advice, really. Thank you. So, yeah, I think that's all. It's brilliant. Yeah.